Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Patient Activation Network podcast. My name is Matt Cavallo, and I'm here with Yvonne D'Souza, and we're here to talk a little bit about Yvonne's book, MS Madness, A Giggle More, Cry Less Story of Multiple Sclerosis. Yvonne, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Matt. This is great. I'm excited to be talking to you.
We're excited to have you. And before we get going, could you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and your background?
Sure. I was born and raised on beautiful Cape Cod. I'm very blessed to live here. Before my diagnosis, I was actually working, before my diagnosis, I worked as a social worker, and then I missed Cape Cod, so I came back home, and at the time of my diagnosis, I was working as an administrative assistant for a doctor, which is kind of boring information, but anyway, that's a little bit about me, I guess.
Well, there's nothing boring about that, because it's interesting. You mentioned that you got diagnosed with an illness, and when that happened, you were working for a doctor's office. Could you tell us a little bit about your onset of symptoms and what it was like to be diagnosed with a chronic illness?
Sure, absolutely. So I turned 40 about 6 months before my diagnosis. And for the year or two before, I had all kinds of weird symptoms going on. But my friends and I would talk about them. And we would just think it was a sign of old age, especially when the things would come and go. Like, for example, weird pains in weird places that would go away, or bladder constantly having to use the bathroom constantly, memory loss, different types of memory things. That was the most concerning, because Alzheimer's disease runs in my family. But then it would go away. So I would think, okay, you know, and I talk to my friends, and like, oh, I get that all the time. We're just getting old. Just face it, we're getting old. And I also had horrible fatigue. That was really awful. And then about 4 months before my diagnosis, I woke up one day and my feet were numb and tingling. And I had just that weekend gone to a casino with my mom and some friends. And I dressed up pretty nice and worn like kind of nice shoes and ran around the casino. So when I woke up the following week and my feet were all numb and tingly, I figured that's just what happens when you exercise. So I didn't think too much about it. But within that week, those symptoms moved up my legs to my abdomen. And I called my doctor, and I was luckier than most because my primary care doctor was great, and I got my diagnosis within 2 or 3 weeks, which is very unusual. And it was an MRI that actually showed what was going on. And I think some people aren't able to get their diagnosis that quickly because it's obvious, but when they looked at my MRI, it was like multiple sclerosis was written across my forehead. The lesions were that clear, so...
Was it hard being around the office, or were there any resources around the office, you know, working for a physician's practice? Was this something that you were finding hard to communicate at work?
Yeah, absolutely. The doctor I was working for was actually a periodontist, so he wasn't really medical.
Okay.
And it was a small office, and I was sort of the point person. And not everybody there was so great and understanding, and especially since I felt like I was... you know, just aging and didn't talk about it. I tried to keep things to myself, but it was tough. Even after I knew what was going on and told work, it was not a good experience. But
now, were you able to keep working after your diagnosis, or did that change the dynamics of your work relationships?
Definitely. So what was going on was the time, even before my diagnosis, the fatigue was the worst. So I was literally going to work, coming home, going to bed, going to work, coming home, going to bed, and still not getting any better. After the diagnosis, about 2 or 3 months later, my boss and I decided that I would take a day off and I would work less hours. So basically it came down to longer hours, Monday and Tuesday, Thursday and Friday, and I'd have Wednesday off to rest. And that didn't work out because when I come back to work, they sort of piled my desk up. So it just wasn't working. But, you know, you mosey on. You just do your best. And then in June, he totally changed his computer system. And after a week of training, I couldn't learn it. It was very terrifying. My coworkers, who were only half paying attention, got it right away. But I no longer knew how to do any aspect of my job. and it was scary, and I had taken notes. I would look at the notes. I'd be able to tell they were my handwriting, but I didn't understand them. And I think at that point, it was like, no, this is big. It's time to go. Especially since, you know, how people do, and they mean well. And my boss was supportive in a lot of ways. You know, it's just easier to dismiss it. Oh, you're just nervous. You know, you don't like change. No, I'm telling you, I can't do my job. And at that point, it was when I left.
And, you know, when you have these conditions that impact your cognition in any way, it's very difficult to communicate that to not only your employers, but, you know, friends or family members. You know, did you notice that relationships as you were going through these struggles with cognition were changing in any way?
Not so much with the cognition. And like I said, the MS diagnosis, I wouldn't call it a relief, but thinking that, you know, Alzheimer's runs in my family and maybe that's what was going on, MS was certainly less scary. And I had, as far as family goes, I had, I don't want to say support, but unfortunately, I have my half-sister, Laurie, had been living with multiple sclerosis herself for about 8 years at the time. So my family had a pretty good understanding, but even hearing that, I talked to Laurie constantly, and we never thought what was going on was MS because her symptoms were so, or what she was dealing with was so different from what I was facing. So because of that, because my sister had been living with it, the family was easier at understanding. Friendships changed, and that was heartbreaking. But not all my friendships. Most of the people, I've been blessed my whole life to have really close friends, and you know, it's true. You find out in the aftermath who was legit, you know, and then I've made a lot of new friends. So it's all good.
Now, in your background as a social worker, did that give you some strength to kind of cope to this change in life?
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, I'd say it worked against me. And here's why. After I stopped working, I tried different things. I tried different careers. I went to vocational rehabilitation I was at a loss, and they were kind of at a loss to help too, but it came to the point where I had to ask for help, and that was what was really hard. Once I started to like go to different agencies to seek help for different things, it was hard because I always saw myself as independent, and I always saw myself in the helper role. You know, I was someone who helped people in crisis fill out paperwork. Now I'm in crisis, and that was a really tough adjustment. But luckily for me, there were some really wonderful people out there, especially in our community. We have an organization called Helping Our Women that's designed for exactly that same thing, to help women in chronic illness who may be needing assistance figure out that assistance. And they were fabulous. And I actually didn't contact them. They contacted me. One of the woman who ran it knew my family. And she called me up, and she's like, hey, I know this. It's going around town. It's a small town. Why haven't we seen you come in? But it took me a long time to do it. So that was a tough dynamic for a while.
Well, you know, and I think you really struck a chord with our listeners because, you know, there's somebody sitting there listening to this right now, and they're thinking to themselves, I really need help, but I don't know how to get it or how to do it. What was that moment in your life where you said, you know what, I know I've been the helper my entire life, but it's okay for me to go seek help?
Well, I do go to seek help. I still struggle with it sometimes, but I mean, I think it was the reality. You know, and with multiple sclerosis, it's cruel in that you wake up one day and you feel fabulous and you're like, there's no reason why I can't have a fabulous career and do this and learn something new. And then the next day you can't even like count to 10, which, well, I would say it's an exaggeration, but it's not. Some days, you know, you're transposing numbers. And so it's still a struggle, but, you know, having people, and so this agency I went to, a lot of the nonprofit agencies have really fabulous people that can walk you through it. And then we're living on the Cape, you know, I'm not close to major cities, so there weren't a lot of support groups locally. So I got a lot of assistance from online support groups on like Facebook. Facebook pages were great. You just put a question out there and you get all this different feedback. So I still turn to that a lot. And I hope that when people pose questions, if it's something I have experience with, I try to weigh in too, because that's really been fabulous. As a matter of fact, one of my favorites is called I Have MS and I'm Fabulous. So anybody out there is looking for a Facebook group that's confidential and that they can learn from and just ask questions of, I recommend that one.
I've been following your blog for a long time, and it's your sense of humor. I feel like, you know, you use humor in a way to cope with this diagnosis. So do you have any examples of how you use humor or why you decided that approach?
Actually, Matt, I have so many examples. How many hours do we have on the tape? No, actually, when you ask like what helped, my family, of course, but really the sense of humor, I think I would have lost my sanity without it. And the way it happened was totally ironic and a little politically incorrect. But the day I think your listeners will understand. The day I got my diagnosis, I was at work, and my primary called and told me I had to get to a hospital in Boston, which is like 2 hours away. And I wasn't very comfortable with city driving. Of course, you just got this huge news, so your head's spinning. So I wound up calling my younger brother, who was 21, and a semi-pro dirt bike rider who drove a huge pickup truck with two dirt bikes in the bed of his truck always. This is going somewhere, I promise. So he's free. He drives me to the hospital. I get confirmation of the diagnosis. We get a treatment plan. And we're leaving the hospital, and Christopher says to me, keep in mind, this is 1 week before Christmas. Christopher says to me, you know, you can totally get one of those handicap parking plates now. And I was like, really? I'm like, Christopher, are you kidding me? I'm totally overwhelmed. This is the last, parking's the last thing I'm worried about. Are you kidding? And he said, seriously, if you don't want to use it right away, you could let me borrow it. And I pictured his truck with the dirt bikes in the bed backing into a handicap spot. And I doubled over with laughter. Inappropriate laughter. To this day, I've chosen to assume he was just kidding and trying to cheer me up. But it felt better. It was a little release in the midst of that huge news. And then the next day, I got stopped for speeding on my way to my first infusion. And I was driving through a town where I've grown up, my father was a police officer, and he's told us our whole lives, you do not speed in this town. The cops are serious. Do not speed. Well, I get stopped for speeding. And this very scary-looking police officer, very strict, comes over and says, where are you going in such a hurry? And I just didn't have the mindset to lie. So what I said was, I'm really sorry, officer. I know I shouldn't be speeding, but I'm on my way to my first infusion because I was just diagnosed with MS, and I'm really scared, and it's really freaky, and now I'm afraid I'm going to be late, so I was going too fast, but that's not an excuse. I'm sorry. I thought the poor officer was going to order me out of the car to give me a hug. And just the look on the poor officer's face made me smile. I didn't crack up because I didn't want to make him mad. He didn't give me a ticket. What he did was he gave me advice because he knew someone who had multiple sclerosis. So he gave me some advice of what he had learned. And it was just all this stuff that was like, it really just helped. I remember I got a phone call right in those first few days. I got a phone call and they left a voicemail, but I couldn't really understand who it was. But all I heard was lifelines. So I called up my sister, Laurie, who'd been living with MS, and I just go off. I'm just out of my head. I'm like, I heard lifelines. Are these the I've fallen and I can't get up people? Am I on some weird telemarketer list? I'm not dealing with it. No way. I can't believe. And I hear her giggling. I'm like, why are you laughing? And she said, those are the people who disperse your medication. All this stuff really helped. And somewhere along the line, I just started writing about it. I've always been an avid reader. When I was a little kid, I had a fantasy I was going to become the next Judy Blume, and I never did, of course, obviously. But I started writing these things down, and before I knew it, the book was born.
Well, and you never became the first Judy Blume because you were the first Yvonne D'Souza.
Thank you.
And the book is, you know, MS Madness, A Gigamore Cry Less Story of Multiple Sclerosis. And I think that, you know, my listeners are like me and we really connect with the stuff that you just said, because all we want to do is feel like a person. You know, we don't want to feel like we are our diagnosis. And laughter truly is the best medicine. You know, it's just, you can easily picture yourself in those situations, and the way you handled it was so beautiful. And you know, the fact that it made you feel real again is, you know, why you want to use humor. And before we go on to talk a little bit more about the book, you know, I wanted to highlight, you know, something on your website that I found really interesting. And, you know, I think that we learn, we connect, and we grow through storytelling. And you have a section on your website, avondesouza.com, a section called Giggles. Can we talk a little bit about the giggles?
Absolutely. So the Giggle page is brand new. I just started a couple months ago because as I go around, people tell me their funny stories too. And I've had situations where people say, and I'm glad when people say this, what could possibly be funny about a serious illness like MS? And then we talk, and then they'll relate stuff to me, and then they'll realize it was funny. So it's great. So I just started the Giggles tab where anyone can go on and add their own medical humor story. And as we talked earlier, Matt, a lot of chronic illnesses have similarities. There's a lot of similarities, not just in symptoms or medical appointments or how people perceive you. There's just a lot of similarities. So the Giggles page is open to anyone who has a funny medical story that they want to put up. And so we can just help each other laugh. And I'm really excited about it. So I hope people will check it out and add their story. And I think it's going to be fun. And I think it's a great way of helping one another.
It
And if I
really is. I mean, it makes you feel like you're not alone. I'm sorry, what were you about to say there?
Well, I wanted to go back to something before when you asked for examples. A lot of people after my diagnosis told me I should be angry. I wasn't angry. I was frustrated. And the frustration just kept coming on and on. And so by making fun of what frustrated me, I felt like I was fighting back, like I was beating up on the bully, so to speak. And I at no time do I make fun of the severity of multiple sclerosis or anyone living with it. I make fun of the frustrations that come from living with it. Like, for example, my then insurance company called me and said, "Oh my goodness, you have this serious chronic illness. This is awful. I'm an advocate. I'm here to help you. My job is to just help you, and I can help you with whatever you need on this chronic illness." So about 2 weeks after that, my premiums went up by like about 60%. I mean, it was ridiculous. And I knew it was coming, but I called the insurance company and said, "Are my medications real expensive? Is it that going to be part? Blah, blah, blah." So the bottom line, I call the advocate and she says, "Oh no, I can't help you with that. I can't help you with financial stuff. I'm here to help you with what's stressing you out about living with multiple sclerosis." And I say, "Well, what's stressing me out about living with multiple sclerosis is how am I going to make these co-pays? Oh, I just told you I can't help you." And so that was part of the frustration. And it got to at one point, and what she did as an advocate, she sent me all kinds of things to read. And I just put that on a stack on top of the things my new neurologist had sent me to read, my primary had given me to read, stuff my sister had for me to read. So that kind of stuff I just had to make fun of because I'm like, "Really? You're here. You're telling me you're here to help me. That's so sweet. That's so nice of you. This is what I need help with, and you're blowing me off."
Well, and you know, it's really true because, you know, we're given as patients, we're essentially crossing a bridge to a new life, and we're given so much stacks of information from every stop along that journey that it's hard to figure out what do I actually need to do?
Right.
Were you ever able to kind of navigate through that system to actually figure out how to address the financial situation?
No, I changed. So I was on COBRA, I stopped working. So that was one of the realizations. Okay, now it's time to go to state-assisted insurance, and that's what I did. But another funny thing, it's like, how can you not make fun of this stuff? Another funny thing she did was we were talking, and I was really tired because that's life with MS. So I probably wasn't thinking clearly. And she asked me if I'd ever thought of hurting myself, which I had been a social worker. I understand that question, and I understand why it has to be asked. But my mindset wasn't with it. So I was like, "No, not really." I mean, when I was in high school, I didn't want to do something, so I was going to jump off the pier and break my leg. But I literally tell her this story because my mindset's messed up. Well, she contacted my neurologist and my primary and told them both that I could potentially be suicidal. And I don't know if you ever listeners have ever had to go to their doctor and prove they're not suicidal, but it's not an easy thing to do. So that's what I mean about making fun of the frustration.
So what did you actually have to do to prove that you, you know, were just sharing a story from your youth?
Well, luckily, I knew my primary care very well, so she put me through a lot of questions, and then I explained what happened. But what was funny, I had a routine appointment with her the next day, like for late in the afternoon, and she calls me in the morning and says, oh, we had a cancellation. Can you come in an hour? And I'm like, wow, that never happens. Okay. And then I was there for a long time just chatting with her. But, yeah, so in the aftermath, you can laugh about it, but at the time, I was like, no, I'm not going to hurt myself, I swear.
Yeah, and I think that's also good advice to, you know, when you're talking to people asking those kind of questions, not to crack a joke. So there's a time for humor and not time for humor, right?
Right, exactly. So I just wanted your readers to understand that, because when I could look at that stuff from a humor standpoint and share that with others, I felt better, and people tell me they feel better. And what's blown me away, I was hoping the book would reach across not just people with MS and not even just people with chronic illness, because I make fun of the absurdity in a lot of things about life, you know, healthy diet, getting exercise, dealing with paperwork, relationships. But what really surprised me and touched me beyond belief was I hoped people would tell me they found the book funny and it made them laugh, and they have. But I've had so many people tell me, wow, you totally got what I was feeling. Wow, someone else feels this way. I just got a review where someone says, I've only been living with MS for a year. It's great, nice to know that I'm not insane, because you talk about stuff that I go through. So it was like, wow, like that was cool and unexpected, but cool.
So talking a little bit more about the book, it's, you've got all this stuff going on in your life. You're learning to live with a new diagnosis. What was it that motivated you or inspired you to sit down and write this book?
You know, Matt, I'm not really sure. I think I just started telling my friends and family these stories, and maybe Facebook helped, because I started posting them on the Facebook groups. And I don't know, I think it was maybe an outlet from a higher power or something, because I'm also very devout religiously. So I don't know, I just started writing. Like I said, I'd always been an avid reader. The only thing I'd really written outside of school was an article in a local Cape Cod paper about history of our town. So I'm not sure, but what happened was, I would say within 10 months, because, you know, several months later I had stopped working. So within 10 months I had a rough draft of the book, and I had an opportunity to go to a writer's conference and meet with an agent who was very encouraging. She really liked the book, but she said, you know, before you try to publish this, you need a platform. I'm like, what's a platform? I had no idea. And she was talking about getting people interested in my writing before the book comes out, and she mentions, you need a blog. And I was like, oh, no, that's not happening. I am technically illiterate. I have no clue. And what can I possibly write about on a regular basis? Well, as you know, Matt, multiple sclerosis and other chronic illnesses give you a lot to work with. So before I knew it, I was writing this blog and not really running out of material. So and that's where the blog came from. And so, yeah, it was, the book was done first, but the book sort of got put aside. The blog kind of took on a life of its own. And then once I was steady with the blog, then I started, you know, getting the, you know, working on the book again.
And what was the inspiration for the monster on the cover? It's such a cute, scary monster.
Well, I had seen something kind of similar. And the idea was that the person on the front is supposed to be me, is carrying around this burden, this monster. But I didn't want him to be scary. I wanted him to be more goofy and obnoxious. So that's what the illustrator I was working with came up with. And I did a contest on my blog for a name, and his unofficial name is Myron the Myelin Munching Monster.
I've always loved him. He's kind of a octopus, unicorn, three-eyed balloon.
Yeah. I wanted him to be like more obnoxious than terrifying. Because that's, I guess that's the metaphor. That's how I think I feel about the illness. You know, I have my grave scares like everybody else does, and I have my breakdowns. I'm not saying you can't, it's not okay to have a breakdown. But on a day-to-day basis, I like to just deal with it as this annoyance in my life. I don't mean to sound belittling, but I think you understand what I mean. It's a terrifying illness, but it's also on a day-to-day basis something we can tackle and battle with. And yeah, when I make fun of it, I feel like I'm fighting back.
Well, you know, and a lot of what you do, and I think, you know, one of the powerful takeaways for my audience is that, you know, you're giving people strategies for other people to talk to you, because a lot of times when you're diagnosed with something, people stop joking around with you. People start walking around on eggshells and treating you like you're a different person. And it sounds like to me you use this, you use humor to let them know that you're the same person you've always been, and that, you know, it's okay to talk to me the same ways you've always talked to me.
Yeah, definitely. And I don't know about you, but as far as reactions from other people, my absolute favorite is when people ask me questions. Because I think that there are people in our lives and in society that are making assumptions and then judging us based on those assumptions. Like my nephew, my sister Laurie's son, he said to me, he's like, "Auntie, I see how MS affects my mom because I can see it because she has trouble walking and this and that. What's wrong with you?" And I loved the question. I was like, thank you so much for asking that. Let's talk about it. So when I meet people who ask me that, and I just encourage other people, you know, just, you know, politely ask. That's just so much better than making assumptions and making judgments. So,
well,
do you find that? Is that something you appreciate in your life, especially since you have young ones? When they have questions, that must be a great opening, a great dialogue for you.
You know, it's everybody's different, you know, and it's hard to talk about this stuff because it's not like you have a cast on. So if somebody sees a cast on your arm, they're like, oh, you know, he's got a broken arm. I can easily relate to that. I feel sorry about it. But, you know, when you're having brain fog or if you're having some of those cognitive symptoms, it's very hard to communicate to another person that can't visualize what you're going through, you know, and I think that what you do in approaching that stuff with humor is so powerful because it really makes you vulnerable. It lets your guards down and lets people know that you're still the same person. And that's really the biggest takeaway that I'm going to have is sometimes, you know, maybe I need to work on that. Maybe I need to work on talking about it a little bit more instead of internalizing it, and maybe, especially with my kids, poke fun at some of the quirky things I do that are MS related that they might just associate with me being absent-minded or something.
And so to give you an example, like, so I'm a girl, this example probably won't work in your world, but I was going somewhere and I did my hair up and I went to put hairspray on my hair to hold this perfect hairstyle. And I discovered after I sprayed the hairspray that it actually sprayed disinfectant, Lysol disinfectant.
Oh, no.
And the sad thing is those items weren't even next to each other. They're not even in the same cabinet. So how I did this is totally MS. And so the joke I made was, well, I don't know if my hair is going to stay, but at least it's germ-free.
And lemony fresh, so.
Right, exactly.
Oh, no, that's great. That's great. And, you know, I'm sure we have a million more of those kind of stories. But as we start to close down, again, we've got Yvonne D'Souza and her book, MS Madness, A Giggle More, Cry Less, Storia MS. If we had to wrap this up for our readers, what would be that one takeaway that you want to leave everyone with?
Well, I live by two quotes. One is how you deal affects how you heal. And my other is my MS is not your MS and your MS is weird. So I would just like to just keep both. But I would encourage people, I would love it if people checked out the book, but also I'd love it if they checked out the website. Because there's a lot there to give them an instant giggle, including laugh lines, which are quotes from people famous and not so famous. That'll just give them a little smile, and I would love it if they post on the giggle page.
You know, and I love your page, and for all my listeners and all my readers out there as well, the links for YvonneDeSouza.com, and where you can get the laugh lines, the giggles, and the books are all at the bottom of my podcast notes here.
Oh,
I want to thank Yvonne for coming today. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Matt. It was a lot of fun chatting with you. It was great.
It was great talking to you as well. And I want to thank my audience for tuning in. This has been the Patient Activation Network podcast. We look forward to bringing you another story of inspiration soon.